to win porn again.
Hey everyone, welcome back to After Adult. I'm Adrian. You probably know me better. You definitely know me better as the porn performer Siri Dahl.
And I'm Rachel. And I'm actually not here. And by that, I just mean I wasn't here to record this episode.
I'm here now
to record this intro and to say that I'm bummed that I couldn't make it because it sounds like Jesse and PJ were like really fun to talk to.
It's okay. You know what? Life is hard. I will say at the top of this episode that this, what you're about to hear is a already recorded a couple days ago discussion between me and Jesse Sage and PJ Sage from Peep Show Media. And we recorded it a few days ago, but it is still currently like just the week right after the election results. So I think it's just been like a really truly wild week for everyone.
A wild week, and also work has been really hard.
Aw. Is it getting into that time of year when you're swamped, like, constantly?
Yes.
Aw. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And we were gonna have a hangout to, like, blow off some steam, but then we had to cancel that even because...
because our brains were hurting. Anyway...
COVID cases and because of COVID, insane right now. Yeah.
Anyway, so please enjoy this episode that I wasn't there for.
And since we're not going to say it at the end of the episode, let's go ahead and say it now. You can follow Peep Show Media at peepshowmedia.com. You can follow Jesse Sage at Sapio Text Jewel on Twitter, and PJ is Peej Sage, P-E-E-J-S-A-G-E. And Peep Show Media is also on Twitter by that name, Peep Show Media.
Yeehaw. And yeehaw. And in that spirit, cowpokes, call and leave a voicemail question for a future episode. Our Google number is 818-457-6535. Again, that's 818-457-6535. If you don't feel like leaving a voicemail, maybe you've forgotten how to talk to people and so your vocal cords don't work, you can email us at therealsiri@protonmail.com or therealrachel@protonmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at afteradultpod or on Instagram at afteradult.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with a new episode for you.
Welcome.
It's everyone.
Welcome to our show. We welcome ourselves to yours.
I welcome myself to your show.
Great.
Thank you to me for having me here.
I know, I realize it's so silly. I don't know how to introduce you when it's like not my show.
I think we just did a fantastic intro.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, so hi. Maybe that would have been more appropriate. Hi.
Hi is always a good intro. Hi, Jesse. Hi, PJ. Hello.
Hi, Siri. Yeah, so we wanted to do a joint episode with you where we put it on both of our podcasts. So we're excited to talk to you today and talk about your work and your podcast and what we have going on over here, too.
Yes, I know, because I think we both have our hands in a lot of different things, so yeah. We'll have plenty information to dissect here.
Yeah, so let's talk about your podcast. You do After Adult podcast with your friend. Can you tell us a little bit about why you started that and what you guys have been up to?
Yeah, so my podcast, After Adult, which anyone who's listening, if you're listening on my podcast, obviously you already know. If you're listening to Peep Show, then you can find After Adult at afteradult.com. I do the podcast with my co-host, Rachel, who's a civilian, not a sex worker currently, formerly, or also, I assume, not futurely. she's just like my best friend that I met when I moved to Kentucky. and so it's kind of great because we talk about my experiences in porn. We talk about just in general, all things sex related. We talk about relationship stuff. We talk about queer stuff, like social justice issues. So we kind of cover a lot of bases. But in general, we try to be entertaining, informative, and, you know, welcoming to all of our listeners, a lot of whom are my fans from my porn career. So yeah, it's a lot. It's really fun to do. And I started doing the podcast in the summer of 2018, back when I was still working a civilian job and had, you know, was in retirement from porn.
Oh, hence the name.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's funny, if you listen to the very first episodes of the podcast, you can kind of listen to the progression of me, like, kind of getting back into porn and dipping my toe back in and telling Rachel, like, oh, yeah, I'm on OnlyFans now. And then talking about when I go back and do my first, my comeback shoot, which is, like, this big deal shoot that I did with Brazzers. And mm-hmm. So it's cool that actually the thing that kind of got me back into porn more than anything else was actually doing my podcast.
That's really? So interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which ironically was about not being
doing
in porn.
Yes, I know. I know. That was the big joke when I got back in officially. And Rachel was like, Adrian, I don't care what you do. Because obviously Rachel calls me Adrian. That is my real first name. And like, that's also another funny kind of weird thing about the fact that I started the podcast when I wasn't doing porn anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Rachel kind of made fun of me. She's like, what are we going to call the podcast now? Like,
right.
after adult? Like, you know.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, PJ, that's a really good point. Is like, it is kind of a small irony that I started creating this project so that I had an outlet to talk about my experiences having done porn, specifically because I didn't do porn anymore.
Right.
And I found myself 1 year into the podcast, essentially wanting to do porn again, because I felt so comfortable like having a space where I could safely just talk about these experiences I had with one of my best friends.
What happened? Like, while you're doing the podcast, did you feel like you started missing it, like reliving those experiences through talking about them with your friend, or you just became more comfortable?
Yeah, it was a huge thing, because Rachel always knew that about me ever since I moved out here and we became friends. Like, I think the first time we ever met, we like got drinks at this burger place. And I remember like having like two beers and being like almost tipsy and just being like, look, I just need to tell you, I moved here because I just like used to do porn. And like, I just stopped doing porn a month ago. And now I'm like randomly here in Kentucky. Like, I don't know what. And she was just like, well, holy shit. So she's been, since the day I met her, she's been super supportive as a friend. But it was also like, because that's not what our friendship's about, I didn't ever just sit down and be like, hey, let me tell you all these stories about porn, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So doing the podcast together kind of gave me this avenue to tell all these stories about porn. And Rachel's been sitting there like, and she's been listening and she's had like input and, you know, mm-hmm. she's learned a lot and I've learned a lot from her. So I think that was a huge part of it, was having this like very uncensored, like I keep saying safe space, because that's what it has been for me, to just talk openly about my experiences. And honestly, post my decision to retire from porn, which is like early 2015, I didn't really get that anywhere else.
Right.
You know, and I wasn't mm-hmm. really seeking it out either. I think I was in a mental space where I was like really wanting to just step back from my career in porn altogether. Like, I was at the time certain that my retirement would be permanent for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think another sad part of it is that I, over the years that I was retired and working like, you know, quote unquote, civilian jobs, that I kind of started to buy into the stigma a little too much. And the scary thing is I didn't notice I was doing it.
How did you start noticing that?
Yeah, I think when I first really noticed was the first relationship that I was in post porn retirement was with this guy that we ended up being together for close to, I mean, it was like well over a year, but not 2 years. So mm-hmm. we were together for long enough that it felt like it was getting serious. And ultimately when that relationship ended, it took a very, very dark turn into him kind of developing stalker behaviors.
Oh, wow.
that was very much rooted in, and I didn't really see it until after we broke up and I saw like all the stuff he was like posting about me on social media and like
his family
members started like messaging me randomly and like chastising me. But essentially all of his stalking had been rooted in this paranoia that I was going to cheat on him because I had a history of being a sex worker.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
And he kind of 180'd on me. I think there's also some other mental health stuff going on there on his end that I didn't really know about. But nevertheless, like that was an odd moment. And it was the first time I realized like, oh, how is it that I've been with this person for as long as I have? And essentially, I felt like I'd been fooled for over a year into thinking that this man had, like, that he accepted my background because he always knew about it. I told him, like, when we first started dating, and he was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And it never seemed to be an issue. But I guess what it was is that he hated it and it made him feel very insecure and uncomfortable. And he just never told me about it until it boiled over and he began stalking me.
Wow.
Out of concern that I was like going off and just fucking random people.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, I mean, well, I can definitely see how that could also contribute to the like need to have a safe space. I mean, I mean, that must have been like a really hard transition out of porn and then, you know, into, I don't know, that kind of situation where you kind of feel intensely scrutinized for your work history.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really from him. And then I had another boyfriend later on that was like more accepting, but also had his own kind of battles with being raised Catholic and not super comfortable with porn consumption in general, even though he watched a lot of porn. So that was an interesting situation.
Yeah, I know a thing or two about that. As an ex-Catholic myself, I'm too familiar with the...
You grew up going to like Catholic school and stuff?
Well, not Catholic school, but the Catholic church, you know, every week and the Sunday school. And when I was really little, I went to Catholic school, but, you know,
you were an altar boy, weren't you?
I was an altar boy. Yeah. Indeed. Yes, I was. I was an altar boy. I feel lucky now to have made it through that unscathed. But,
Yeah,
I know. I mean, it's honestly, I look back and given all of the allegations that have surfaced in Western Pennsylvania, I feel kind of lucky.
Wow, yeah.
But, so I was. And,
but we were also outed by his family members who somehow found our porn, but were very judgy about
found
it.
Our on Facebook.
That's what they said.
Oh my! Oh yeah, all the hotbed of porn that is Facebook, of course.
It was so ridiculous because, like, so much of the family was mad because they were like, "How could you do this? Children could see." And I was like, "There is 0% chance that our porn is on Facebook. If you worked in porn, you would know that there is no way." Like, of course I'm not advertising porn on Facebook, but even if I wanted to,
I could not.
That is not a thing that would happen. Shit, I'm like a gender and sexuality professor, and like I can barely post about
your
college. Facebook is so restrictive. I'm like, you think we're just like posting like blowjob clips on Facebook? Obviously, like one of my uncles was like on a porn site and like didn't want to admit that and was like, "Oh shit, I saw it on Facebook because I'm old and I don't know how Facebook works."
Right, but it's the same thing you were saying. You know, like people who have a lot of problems with porn are like somehow always on porn.
Yeah. Well. Oh God. Yeah. It never. I mean, honestly, that's like always the case. It's kind of hilarious if it weren't so sad and they weren't also typically the same groups that are crusading against porn.
Right. Right.
No, but there's a lot of self-loathing there that like people I think never deal with. I can say that as someone who did have to like spend a lot of time processing that, like coming up in like a really, really, really sex negative environment where like, you know, masturbation was a sin and blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
And it's, you know, it took me a long time to unpack that as an old person. I mean,
as an old person,
as a young person,
as an old person,
maybe as an probably as an old person. But as an elder millennial, it's tough. I mean, part of me is just angry because I had to grow up that way. But part of me like feels for all of the people who are still like trapped in all that self-loathing.
Oh, it's painful to see. Yeah. I have so many examples. Sorry, I worked in a job between my retirement and coming back to porn. One of the jobs that I had was in an environment where I actually worked alongside a number of evangelical Christians and even like seminary students. And
wow, in Kentucky.
Yeah. And it was, there's a couple seminaries in Louisville. So,
what seminaries are there?
There is a Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and then there's a Presbyterian Seminary.
I asked because I went to seminary, so.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I figured that was
I did not know
up.
That. Oh, that's
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Cool.
I did a.
I so
did
I was an altar boy, and she went to seminary, and look at us now.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I went to Berkeley, so it was like very.
So they were basically making porn in seminary.
Yeah, I don't think it was the same, but, you know, it was much more like...
Berkeley doesn't make you take an oath that you'll never consume alcohol, right?
No. Yeah.
Pretty sure the Baptist seminary does do that to students, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was just curious because I probably, like, know about it, but it's been so many years since I did that. I did that right out of college, so it was an interesting experience, actually. I find religion interesting, so I liked it. But I also wasn't in a very conservative, like, anti-sex environment, so it didn't feel oppressive to me in the way that it feels oppressive to a lot of people.
Yeah, I actually was going to say something about that, since this has become, you know, a topic of discussion right now. But, like, because I get asked this a lot by fans, and like I was not raised in a particularly religious household, or at least I didn't perceive that I was raised in a religious household. Mm-hmm. But one of the strangest things to me about, like, you know, coming out to my family and specifically my parents as a sex worker the first time around in like 2012 was that my mom's kind of biggest beef with me choosing to do porn was, initially, I think her perspective has now changed, but initially it was how we raised you to be a Christian. How could you do this?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was that surprising to you?
Oh, 100%. I was like, what? I went to Sunday school when I was a kid. I sang in church choir. I like didn't ever hate church, but I didn't particularly love it. And then by the time I was supposed to, you know, be the age that you go through like confirmation and stuff, I refused to get confirmed. And so I was never
confirmed.
Oh, wait,
so you were Catholic?
No. So my family, my mom's the daughter, or was the daughter because my grandpa passed away, but my mom was the daughter of a Lutheran pastor.
Oh, okay.
So my family grew up kind of bouncing between Lutheran and Episcopal churches because my dad was usually a payrolled choir member. We would go to whatever church my dad sang at, and it kind of changed depending on what jobs he got and who paid him the most.
I didn't know that choir members were ever paid. I know organists
in,
are paid.
In churches with like a big music program, they can be.
Yeah.
And it's usually not much. I mean, it's nothing you could live on. Like, my mom has always been the breadwinner. Mm-hmm. So essentially, she was really the one supporting the family. And my dad was just like, cool, I like to sing.
It's a good life. If you can get it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just thought it was very funny that my mom's perspective was, well, we raised you to be a Christian. Like, we've instilled these values in you that say, don't do sex work. That's the same as prostitution. And that's obviously bad. And I was like, I don't know what you think you put me through, but you seem to think I absorbed, I did not absorb. What I did absorb, though, is like love people.
Right.
Like basic, like just fucking love people.
Right.
Allow people to be who they are. And don't hurt people.
Right.
Like, that's actually, so the religious or, you know, quote unquote Christian values, which I think are just like, you know, valuing humans, that I did learn growing up are things that I didn't really get from church. But fortunately, this is where I feel lucky about my childhood and the fact that I was kind of made to go to church as a kid, is like, I at least didn't receive an opposing message from any of the churches that I went to growing up.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. we were going to these generally really liberal churches, like Lutherans and Episcopals tend yeah. to be like mm-hmm. pretty chill.
Yeah. I mean,
so I didn't really get any bad messaging. Yeah.
Yeah. They, Episcopals, before a lot of other religions, were ordaining openly gay people. So, yeah.
Yep. And they ordain women.
Right.
And God, my mom actually was like going to it. My parents have, moved away, but for a while they lived in Kentucky, and my mom was very excited, and I think she was trying to get me to go to church every week with her, because her argument that she thought would convince me to go to church regularly is that her church had just hired a female pastor who identified openly and used this terminology with the congregation, which is all like literally a bunch of like 90-year-old people that she identified as queer.
Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah.
And I was like, that is really cool.
Yeah.
And then my mom was like, I thought queer was a bad thing to call someone. So I had to explain yeah. that to my mom. It was a very fun conversation.
How old is your mom?
My parents are like solidly in the boomer generation, and they're like 65 and 67 or 68.
Okay. Yeah. That's yeah. close to my parents' age too. Yeah. But I mean, they were in California, so I don't think that they were, I'm from California. I don't think that they, I don't know. I'm pretty sure my mom knows how to use the word queer. I don't know about
that.
Well,
that's, see, that's awesome. Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised that my mom actually didn't, because she always like yeah. in her career, she worked with people who were more like millennials and stuff. She was like essentially managing people my age.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm. but you know, that no, she just apparently had never heard it. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just different cultural contexts, right. maybe. I mean,
to be
yeah.
fair, a lot of my, you know, gender and sexuality students still, you know, come to college, mm-hmm. You know, having an impression that that term is fairly negative. So it's, you know, it's something that I talk about with them every semester, and people, you know, it takes them a while to feel comfortable kind of talking about it. And of course there's variations. I mean, there are some of them come in identifying as queer, but there's always a lot of people who that's not a word that they've heard thrown around a lot. So I think it just depends, you know, if you're from the city or if you're from small town America and like
right.
what part of the country point. And all those yeah. other things. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's even across the country.
Yeah, that's yeah. a great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So so the podcast then going circling back to yeah. the podcast. It seems like it's been a pretty like transformative experience for you then.
It has been. It's almost like you know, it's been like a version of therapy or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that in the best way. Like, it's given me a space to really like kind of work out some thoughts that I had around my own choices to do sex work, and then ultimately it helped me realize how much I really missed it, and honestly kind of re-empowered me to claim being a sex worker in the sense that, like, the longer I started doing the podcast and feeling comfortable about it, the more I was like, you know, I miss mm-hmm. this enough. And like, I think I always missed it, but I was afraid of what that meant, because
yeah.
if I admitted that I missed it a lot, then it's like, well, now I look hypocritical because I made this big deal out of retiring, and like, my parents are so happy that I quit porn and they mm-hmm. finally accept me. And yeah. if I do porn again, then I'm going to be like cast out from the family. And so I don't want to confront that. And so there was a lot going on
yeah.
mm-hmm. that I was repressing out of basically fear of the stigma. And I had just internalized a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it kind of re-empowered me to really be like, you know what? Actually, like, fuck that.
Right. Yeah.
Simply fuck that.
I know what you mean, because there's something, I mean, we've been running the podcast, our podcast since 2017, and there's something about having these like weekly conversations with other sex workers that, you know, and with each other, but to just have that space to do that, that makes you feel very connected to the community, to other sex workers, to have a stronger like sense of identity within the community that does make you feel like, fuck that. Like, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with any of the people who I interact with. We're just people living our lives. It does. I think it does a lot to undo some of that stigma.
I think it does. I think you're right. And I mean, even extending into like, you know, daily life and things like that, there are people that I know on like an acquaintance basis where I live that like mm-hmm. we go to the same gym, or like, you know, I know them through a mutual friend, and like these people are not sex workers or not at all in the industry. But generally, people around me kind of know that I have this podcast. And so just out of curiosity, once in a while, I know someone will like download an episode. And it's kind of awesome how often I get just like a random message through social media, or like a text from someone that's an acquaintance of mine who will be like, hey, like your podcast is really cool. And like, I've learned a lot, and it's really kind of like opened my mind to different lifestyles. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate it. And it's fantastic to get that kind of feedback. Just like talking about stuff I do that doesn't necessarily feel that special to me a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, it was funny because I totally know what you mean, because we get used to, you know, we're living our lives, and these are our lives, and these are our communities and our work. And so it seems pretty insignificant to talk about them on like a day-to-day level, because, you know, it's just talking about what you do every day. And I was at the grocery store the other day, and this woman stopped me, and she was like, oh my gosh, are you Jessie? I follow you. But, you know, and she was obviously like a fan of the podcast and of my writing. And she was like, or she said, I could write a article on why your Twitter feed is important, because it's so amazing that you've integrated just regular life with like sexuality. And for people who don't feel like they can do that, that seems really radical.
Yeah. And it does, and it kind of is.
I mean,
truly, like, to me, it, like, I'm saying that as someone who, like, literally a year ago today was working at a desk job in a business that was owned by very, very conservative people. And mm-hmm. at that point, I was, like, doing OnlyFans on the side, but I was like, oh, God, gotta hide this, you know?
Right.
It's truly radical to, like, be an openly sexual being any way that integrates it, like that also shows your humanity.
What I was getting at is it becomes normalized when you do this all the time. But there's a lot of people who look at that, who look at your podcast or, you know, our Twitter feeds where we've integrated life and sex and all sorts of things and think, wow, that's so amazing. You know, because I think that so many people are living like very compartmentalized lives.
Yeah.
But I also had a desk job at a conservative place where I was doing phone sex on the side. And by on the side, I mean when...
Not at the job.
No, I did it at the job.
I would, like, you know, get a message on OnlyFans of, like, you send me this photo and they tip me the amount. And then I would, like, go into the bathroom and take a photo of my butthole or something.
Yeah, so, right.
At this particular job, you were left alone for like days at a time.
I was, yeah, so. Because I was like holding down the fort while they were out on the job, you know, and so I would be in the field. So I would be sitting, you know, sitting by myself, taking calls and doing stuff. And it was funny because I got laid off. And when I got laid off, they were like, well, I really hope you can find something to do. Like, and I was like, I'm good. Because I had this whole sex work side hustle on the side that nobody knew about. And I was like, well, I'll just do this full time. I have a 3-month severance. Awesome. Bye. See you.
Yeah. That's great.
And they wanted to, you know, talk about it and process it. I'm like, I'm good. Do I need to come back tomorrow or can I just go?
Sold.
You're like, thank you for this blessing. Happy holidays.
Exactly. I'll never contact you again. I hated working an office job.
Yeah, I loved the job that I had. I loved the work that I did, and I loved the people that I worked with. But yeah, I can't even overstate how much I hated sitting at a desk all day, which is ironic because I like often sit at a desk all day now, but it's right. Like,
it's on your own terms. It's a little different.
Yeah. I'm not an hourly, wage worker. So it doesn't feel as, exploitative.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Since you have returned to porn, I was just kind of curious about like how this return to porn has compared to like getting into porn in the first place.
It's been a lot easier than it was to get into porn the first time around in 2012 as an unknown. I was shocked, I have to say, like, aside from like doing my podcast, getting more comfortable with accepting that I missed porn in the first place, like the other kind of kick in the butt that made me like think, you know what, maybe I should consider going back into this, was when I like realized how large of a fan base I still had as Siri, the porn star. Because when I said I retired in like 2015, I truly retired. I didn't keep tabs on anything. Like, there was a bit of work that I had to do to like wrap up some loose ends, but other than that, I was hands off completely and didn't look at it, didn't really think about it. And as soon as I started, you know, thinking about it again, I was like, I Googled and I found like I had a subreddit with like over 50,000 subscribers, and like,
wow,
that was just a bunch of people posting photos of me. Like,
you didn't know it existed?
I didn't know. No, because it. Wow. I mean, if it existed before I retired, it was much smaller, and I didn't ever really use Reddit other than doing like one AMA. So. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a thing that I was really involved in. And so seeing that and then realizing I also had like some dude who was running a fan Instagram account that had a large following. I don't even remember how many followers it had. So that was another thing I was surprised by. But that was kind of a comfort to me when I was thinking about returning to porn, because it was a very intimidating thought. Like, is that even going to be sustainable? Do people even want to see me anymore? Like, you know, I didn't know. And as soon as I saw those things, I was like, well, there's evidence here that if I do return, I have people who are interested in seeing me on camera still. So that's good. And that's comforting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that being said, it's been so much easier coming back after a break because I have already built a fan base, basically. Like, there's still some challenges as far as like working for production studios. Like, I don't have an agent, and I didn't really have an agent before either. But a lot of porn, like any field, there's a lot of networking involved for those things. Even with that, it's like I don't have to shoot for professional productions unless I really want to, because I can actually, at this point, I'm super excited to say that I can make a living on just like OnlyFans and creating my own content.
I was going to say that it seems like in the time that you were gone, that became more and more of a possibility, too.
It existed before I retired, but it was on such a smaller scale. Like, the big thing when I first started out, so like 2012, 2013, was Clips for Sale, which is, of course, still around, but they've been purchased by MindGeek Brands, which is the company that owns Pornhub, Brazzers, etc.
Right.
So Clips for Sale is kind of on the outs. I'm not sure if it's being purchased by MindGeek was an intentional way for them to, I don't know why they purchased it is what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, but yeah. All I know is there have been a lot of people talking about like how Clips for Sale doesn't produce as many sales for people since MindGeek bought the site.
Oh, that's interesting.
So whatever they've done, they have done something, I don't know if it's like SEO related or something, where like that site doesn't actually produce as much income as it used to. But like, there was a time back in the day that I was making a couple thousand probably a month on Clips for Sale.
Yeah, that's good.
It was good. And it was still far, far less than what I would make if I shot, you know, one or two scenes professionally a week for other companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But fortunately I did get a head start on that, like in a time when many porn performers in 2012 through 2015 did not yet realize the value of having your own content.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And because I was doing clips for sale and I launched my own subscription website during that time. I owned all my own content, that like everything that I shot for myself, I owned, and I had a large library of my own content when I retired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that, this, I think, helped as well. Yeah.
This is kind of a minutia question, but I'm curious, did you keep your clips for sale running after you retired?
Yeah, still up to this day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't do the same type of content I used to, because the clips for sale was and is a little more of a niche, like fetish site.
Right.
Or it's more oriented to those interests. So back when I had first built my store, my specialty was doing cosplay clips, and specifically where I would dress as Power Girl.
I didn't know you used to do cosplay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was only, I didn't even like care about comics or even really any like Power Girl stuff. It's just that I got so many requests from fans to do it that it just kind of became a thing.
So interesting. And I feel like that happens to a lot of people, that there is just some combination of traits that gets you kind of like pushed in a certain direction. And a lot of us, like, I don't know, you know, we as a couple, like, I you know, have, for example, have gotten pushed into a lot of cuckolding stuff, lot of like bi different, like bi kind of content, and a whole, you know, I don't know, a number of different things that I would have never consciously said, like, oh, that's what we're gonna do, you know, when we were starting to get into this. But you just kind of find over time, you're like, wow, so many different people project the same kinds of fantasies onto us.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just cater to that, you know?
We should just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's such a good point.
You know, I've talked to a lot of people who've had that experience with totally different things. And you wonder, like, what do I, like, emit that...
Yeah, triggers this fantasy, you know?
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, as someone who identifies pretty strongly as a, well, if we're talking specifically about the, like, queer D&D alignment chart that got really, like, spread across Twitter about a year ago, I identify as a chaotic bottom. so it, coming from that direction, it's sometimes upsetting to me how much my... my own fans, and also just like maybe like just porn fans who aren't necessarily particular to me, but like I get a lot of asks for more like femdom stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like, and a lot of the time it's like, they don't just want like soft fem, they want like hard, like mean girl femdom. And
yeah.
And I'm like, I'm a pillow princess bottom. I don't know if you know
this.
Oh my
gosh, you're speaking my language. I have the exact same problem. And I call
this
myself.
This story is so familiar to me.
I call myself a pillow princess, and I don't even mind. And
same.
It doesn't even make me feel bad. Somebody's like, you know, that's an insult, right? And I was like, no, I don't think
it's
so.
It's not. Excuse me. I just used it, sir. It is not an insult.
Yeah. I am totally comfortable being a pillow princess. I don't feel bad about it. And it's really. And it's really funny because I get so many requests for like dom stuff. And I made a joke with a friend of mine recently and was like, I'm not a dom, but I play one sometimes, because I do. But and I've become comfortable with it because I get a lot of requests for it. But it's not actually like I am not a dom. In any way.
And, when you started doing phone circuit work, it was so funny because you would be like, why do these people want me to do stuff?
Oh my God. Oh. Yep.
Shouldn't they just hear the sound of my voice and,
I just want
and
them
feel
to,
my aura?
I just want them to worship my body and take care of me. Why do I have to do all of this stuff?
Dude, I feel you so hard. I earlier this week, and we're recording this, you know, about a week post election.
Yeah.
So one of the things, and this started out as a complete and total joke, but I just recently, I think I found my stride when it comes to femdom, how I can comfortably produce femdom content where I am genuinely in a dominant space in a way I've never been before. Mm-hmm. And that is, I decided to make this, well, it started out just because a fan who ordered a custom video from me, as a part of the custom order, bought these like pleaser like, you know, stripper heels that are lace up knee high, and they're 8 inches tall.
Oh my gosh. They're
wow.
Crazy shoes. Like, they're awesome. And I am terrified of walking in them. But I recorded this custom video in it, and then I was like, damn, I look like I'm ready to kick a dude's ass in these shoes. I should film something else. And it was literally like the day after all the media started calling the election in Joe Biden's favor. And I was pretty elated about that news. So I was like, ah, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a femdom clip where I only talk to people who, like, men who voted for Trump, who are Trump supporters. And yeah. I will just demean them. So that's the mental space I needed to get into in order to be authentic about my femdom. And like, it was a total joke, but I ended up making this short video about it. And like, what's hilarious is I like have a bunch of guys on my OnlyFans that are really enjoying it. And almost all of them have felt the need to send me like a disclaimer, like, hey, like, I'm Canadian. But I just really liked femdom, and I'm like, dude, it's cool. Like, I don't like what whoever you voted for. This video was kind of a joke. Like, it was fun for me to make, and it's just enjoy it. Like, have at it, sir.
You know, a long time ago, before things even got this to where we are today, is the only way I can describe it.
It's divisive. Yeah.
Yeah. I had somebody call my phone sex line who knew that I was not a Trump supporter. Or I don't think he knew that. He just assumed that because he didn't actually know me. It's only somebody I've talked to once. And he wanted to be humiliated for his devotion to Trump. That's actually what he wanted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Do you remember that, PJ?
Not really.
Okay. Maybe I didn't tell you about it yet.
I mean, you might have.
What kind of things did you say to him?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, he really, like, I talked to him for half an hour or something before we really got into this because I was trying to figure out what he was looking for. And then he was like, well, you know what it was? I remember now. It was even more elaborate than that. He wanted to do a role play where he was getting a massage at a massage parlor, but it was like a happy endings massage parlor. And he somehow was convinced by tricked by his best friend's girlfriend. And she was the one who was going to do the massage, but she was angry with him because
fantasies are always so elaborate.
They really are. She was angry with him because he was a Trump supporter. And so I was playing her, obviously. And so I was going to come in like pretending that I was going to give him this happy ending massage that we had negotiated like at the bar the night before because I was the girlfriend of his best friend. But then what I was going to do is use this like closed room that I now had him held hostage in.
Oh my gosh. Like,
tell him what an idiot he was and
oh my God.
Beat him in some way. I don't know. It was a whole
thing.
This
really gives me a whole new insight into at least a small percentage of diehard like Trump supporters. It's like, I wonder how many people out there who support Trump have some sort of femdom or like domination, I guess, or cuckold fetish. And, and it's just like, except their fetish is not on a personal level. Or maybe it is, but it's more on a national level. Like, they just are excited to see the country be held hostage by Trump. All right, I'm going in a weird direction here, but.
Well, I mean, PJ and I were talking about this recently because, like, right before the election, actually, he was saying that, you know, the polls were looking really good for Biden, but we were talking about the fact that, like, I'm sure that there's a lot of people who are, like, secretly Trump supporters.
Oh, yeah.
Because they know that they're not, like, I think a lot of aware people know that they're not supposed to like Trump.
Yeah, so, people are embarrassed. By.
So we were like, is that really accurate? Is that really what people are, who they're going to vote for, are the people that they're talking about in these surveys? But I don't know.
Where do they get all the exit poll data? I've always wondered that. And especially I found myself wondering it in the past week. Like, I've never exited a polling place and been asked who I voted for.
Right. I've had the the same thought. Nobody ever asked me, so I don't know where they are.
I mean, they're sampling, so, you know, but yeah, I don't know. Clearly, they're not doing a good job. That's what we learned. Wherever they are, yeah, they're not where they're supposed to be. Either that or people are just lying or whatever. But boy, the polls did not do a good job this time or last time. But that's another yeah, story for another time. I just wanted to say that I did not consent to any sort of Trump national level domination kink. And I feel like, you know, all those people with this like weird, you know, fetish, Trump fetish, are they're violating my consent here, and I want them to stop.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I understand you have your kinks. It's fine. I won't kink shame you. You want to be dominated by this man. It's cool with me, but that should maybe try to not bring it into the public arena so much.
Right. You know? Yeah, maybe just hire somebody who could give you the same feeling.
Yeah, it's like, it's getting to where I'm like, okay, are we the people that are enacting a BDSM scene in the middle of the grocery store? These are just innocent onlookers. Take it inside, please. Right.
Yeah, so...
Well, maybe you figured out a you know, a post White House career for Trump, maybe.
Yeah, I should write a column one week about my massage parlor session. Because there's a lot of psychological stuff to unpack there.
There really is. Like, there's truly a lot. I'm very curious about that. Honestly, I don't want to say that, like, my dad might fall into that, but I'm also going to say, like, I think maybe my dad might fall into that category of man supporting Trump.
Oh, I know my dad. I know my dad supports Trump.
Yeah.
And I can't talk about it. I can talk about it with you. I can't talk about it with him.
I don't. I actually saw my dad somewhat recently, and, like, we have an okay relationship. But, like, it's okay because we don't talk about his love for Trump, and we don't talk about what I do for a living. And
right. As long as
none of those topics are broached, everyone's okay.
Yeah, that more or less chalks up, like, our relationship to my family as well. And
yeah,
it's not ideal, you know, but.
Yeah, it feels strained for that reason. But I saw my dad like a week and a half ago, and he was very like adamant, like proud to tell me that he's now, and he said this like with his grandeur, like it's a very special label to take on, that he's apolitical.
Oh,
interesting.
And I was like, I didn't pry. I was just like, oh, okay, all right then. But of course I'm sitting there going like, what does that mean? Like, I don't know what that means for you. Are you telling me that you no longer vote? Are you telling me you vote, but you don't care? You're detached from the system? I was like, I don't know what that means. And it sounds like bullshit.
Right. He's above it. You know, he's just rising above it all.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know.
Like, what lovely privilege for you, sir. Like,
that's what I was going to say. I feel like, I mean, that's kind of a pretty privileged position to take. Like, most of us don't have, like, the choice of, you know.
The luxury, yeah.
The luxury of rising above politics. Like,
yeah, so I'm interested in the experience that your friend had, like, running the podcast with you. Do you feel like, you know, because I know she doesn't, she's not a porn consumer. Do you think that her attitude about the industry has changed, like, have going through this with you?
Yeah, I think, and of course, I don't want to, like, speak for Rachel, but since we do the podcast together, we talk about this, you know, frequently with each other. I think I have a pretty strong grip on her views about everything. Mm-hmm. And I think for her, because she is admittedly someone who doesn't really consume porn, at least not in audiovisual format.
Yeah.
So she's also queer. And even if she were watching video type porn, she's probably not going to be watching the type of stuff that I perform in. So she, as someone who doesn't really have a frame of reference for specifically the type of porn work that I do most often, I think she's enjoyed kind of getting to hear a lot more of the details of the inner workings of the industry. And mm-hmm. and this is not something Rachel's ever said, but it is something I've heard from other friends of mine, or even like casual fans who aren't like habitual, like super habitual porn consumers, but will like join my OnlyFans just because they're like, wow, like it's cool that I can interact with you and you're like a human being. And I'm like, cool. Right. Yes, we all are. Yeah. but just on the podcast, we just talk so much about kind of behind the scenes stuff and like what making porn is like. And I think for a lot of people, all of that is so obscured. I've heard a lot from folks who have been fed a lot of misinformation about especially the mainstream porn industry. So I've heard a lot from folks who are like happy to hear via my podcast or whatever else that it's not the awful, completely unethical, demonic.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It is so often made out to be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Of course, there are like, there are bad actors. There are in every industry. And like, porn has its baddies. But like, by and large, these are people who are just doing their work and like getting by and living their lives. And in my experience, more often than not, porn performers are incredibly like kind-hearted and positive, loving people.
Yeah.
So really not the stereotype that has just existed for forever, it feels like.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, that's been my experience too. And I think that it's like, I think that those stereotypes are actually really, really hard to move past with a lot of people, because I think you're right that it is so like obscured and people don't understand how any of it works, and they have a really hard time understanding how you could be in it and then also go to the grocery store and do normal things and live your lives, which is bizarre. I almost feel like, you know how when you were a little kid and you would see your teacher out and you would be like, oh my gosh, you don't live at the school, like you have kids and you have like something else going on. I feel like that's how adults act towards sex workers.
Oh, that's such a good, that's perfect. No, that, because it totally is. It totally is. And like, Jesse, you interviewed me for your article, and I kind of touched on this, but I kind of feel that, like, I feel that since I don't live in, like, in LA, you know, I don't live in a place that is concentrated with content creators and like Instagram influencers and people who are very publicly like being a somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when I'm outside of my house, I'm just like out here, like in the middle of fucking Kentucky, like doing my thing. And I'll go to my gym and I get some like dude, like giving me weird eyes. And I'm just like, oh, okay. Like, I don't keep it a secret. So like, I know that he knows that I do porn, but I'm like, okay, like, watch me do my workout if you want to, sir. I'm literally just doing the same shit that you are, and it's not anything special. I'm not gonna, like, show you my titties right now. Like, granted, I say that, and then I'm literally... Right. I'm like, well, I say that, but I have actually literally shot, like, a video clip of me with my titties out at my gym. It was just, like, at 11 p.m. when I was the only one there. So, it's different, right?
I've had weird experiences like that. One day I sold something on Craigslist one time. It was funny because it wasn't funny. It was creepy. I sold something on Craigslist and my son was outside with me and the guy stopped and he's like, I know you. And I was like, I'm sorry. I don't think we know each other. And he's like, no, I know you. What's your last name? And he was trying to like, catch me on something. And I was like, I'm not from here. You don't know me. And then he finally left. Like, I was blowing him off because I knew what he was getting at. And my son was like, what is up with that guy? And I was like, I don't even, like, he thinks he knows me and he's being ridiculous. And like, my kids know what I do. So I think he picked up on what was going on, but I didn't have to be like super explicit about it. But he's like, my son's like, men are weird. And I was like, yeah.
I love it. Oh my God.
Yeah, and I had the same thing. I had the same thing happen because I have like tattoos that are fairly like people notice. And I was at a lacrosse game and this dad comes up and he's like hovering around me and he's like, nice tattoos. And I was like, thank you. He's like, I like those tattoos. He didn't say recognizable. He made it. I can't remember what he said, but he said something like that was like,
or something.
Yeah, something like that. That I was like, all right, dude. Okay.
Yeah, that's like the rallying cry of like creepy internet like reply guys. Who like want to let you know who you are, but they don't want to just come out and be like, yeah, I looked at your porn
on Facebook.
Nice Facebook. Tattoos. Yeah. I like your on Facebook. I found your porn on Facebook. Yeah. Great tattoos.
Terrible. Yeah, you're right. It is like an IRL reply guy.
It really is. Yeah.
They like just orbit around. You're like, what do you want? I'm not going to, you know, give you a show here in the middle of a, you know, parent game.
Right. Okay, you know me. Please subscribe to my OnlyFans.
That's bizarre.
Bizarre is the perfect word to describe it.
Yeah.
Tell me about Kentucky. I'm actually interested because we are, we share a mountain range. We share... the Appalachians.
And we're actually not that far from each other. It's
no, we're not. We're not. Yeah.
They sometimes call Pittsburgh the Paris of Appalachia. I don't know if you knew. And they call Kentucky the delicious bourbon producing, bluegrass making.
Who is they? Is that you, PJ?
No, I don't know. Well, okay. It's they. It's they. I didn't make up the Paris of Appalachia
the
thing.
The Appalachians.
Yeah. But when I was just.
I think that because I'm like, whoa, this is all stuff PJ likes. They.
I was just trying to balance. I didn't want to, like, you know, I didn't want to just talk about how cool Pittsburgh is. I figured I would, you know, we should also shout out to Kentucky.
For the bluegrass and the bourbon. Yeah.
With the bluegrass
and
the bourbon.
It's beautiful, too, isn't it?
I know about Louisville, but I don't, like, I can't even pretend I'm, like, super familiar with the state of Kentucky, having lived in it for 5 years and never really seen anything outside of Louisville. For the most part.
But that's a cool city, isn't it?
It is. It's one of the reasons that I choose to stay here and like travel when I shoot professional stuff out west rather than like just moving to LA because I really like it here a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's unusual. I think when we think of porn, you know, historically, and by historically, I mean like when you started in porn, you know, like only, you know, like a decade ago or less than, you know, mm-hmm. we really thought of porn being concentrated in LA. And I mean, still it's concentrated in LA, though we see, you know, more in Vegas and Miami and New York to some degree, right? But increasingly, you know, it is possible to live in Kentucky and to be part of the porn world. And I just think that that's kind of interesting. So I was just curious about what it's been like for you to work from middle America. And, you know, if that's a different sort of experience.
It's vastly different. Like, it's, you know, I do, like, I rent a room in a house in LA so that I have, like, a semi-permanent place when I am out there for shoots. And so mm-hmm. I'm only ever there, like, a week for a stretch, and then I'll come home, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even, like, just being in LA for that week, I'm like, okay, like, there's a lot I like about it. And I do sometimes miss Los Angeles, but I'm always more relieved to come back to a place where the entertainment industry isn't all around you. And, you know, all of my closest friends are here. My partner is here, which is a huge reason that, you know, I don't have any plans to, like, leave the area mm-hmm. anytime soon. Right. 'Cause that's a very important facet of my life. And other than that, like, I really like the people that I've met here. Louisville's an incredibly cool city with so much community and so much to offer. And it's obviously been challenging. It's been a hard place, like, for the community of people of color here. It's been challenging, I think, for fucking ever. But obviously with, like, Breonna Taylor and all the protests over the summer that are continuing right now and still occupying the area formerly known as Jefferson Square in Louisville. Like, it's a lot. I have friends that are directly involved in, like, organizing, and I just feel like I have really strong roots here now. It definitely makes me feel away where I'm like, nah, like, if I were to move away from here, I would feel like I'm leaving some very important work behind, and like communities that I want to be a part of continually and want to help. And a lot of that is like being someone who I like the feeling of actually having resources because I never did before, in terms of like I can actually, like, when I see causes that need help, like, I have time that I can offer. I have money that I can offer. And that's incredibly meaningful to me. And I think it says a lot also about, like, sex workers get overlooked a lot in that regard. But, yeah, I mean, like, I would like to do more, like, nonprofit work publicly. But, like, even in a place where, like, the help might be needed, there's so much stigma against being a sex worker that I like couldn't necessarily do that openly. So that's why I say I like having the resources to donate, because if I can't actually openly be a part of something, I'm like, well, okay, can you take my money? Like, you know, so yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that. I mean, I feel like that in, you know, we talk about wanting to move at some point, but there is something about being able to be connected to like a smaller community that I think is that I think there's something really powerful and important about that.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful. And I never really had it in my life until I lived here, which is, I think, another reason that I feel so strongly connected now.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I am here. People hear Kentucky and they're like, ah, you hillbillies fucking your cousins, like, you know, and they throw out all these things where I'm like, okay, yes, like, that's definitely a stereotype that we should also really stop talking about. We should really get rid of that. That's very if you want to talk about what's going on in the Appalachians and how those communities are disadvantaged, that's a conversation, but let's not start it with talking about fucking cousins. Like, that's
right
very okay. We can save that for our discussions about porn, since that's very prevalent in porn.
These days.
Like, taboo family relationships.
And more all the time.
Oh God, I know. But like, people don't realize a lot if they've never been here that like Louisville's on the border of I could drive basically an hour and a half and go buy legal weed in Illinois. So it's very close. Like, we share a border with Illinois and with Indiana and Ohio. Like, I could drive to Cincinnati in just over an hour. And all those places are thought of as very strictly Midwestern.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, that kind of being in a border place is always sort of an interesting experience, I think.
Yeah, it is weird. It's also kind of weird because we're Eastern time zone, but if you drive basically directly north to like Indiana, or if you drive directly south to Nashville, you're in Central time.
That is weird.
I don't know why they drew the border the way they did, but
it's
kind of odd. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else, Siri, that you wanted to talk about?
No, I'm super content, especially now that we completed our geography lesson.
It's a very odd place to end.
Yeah.
We're like, we can draw a map for you all and put it on Instagram so that you can see where we're recording from.
I think if we're going to have a topic to go out on, I think we should go out on butts, personally.
Oh, really?
Butts.
Okay.
Butts, yeah. I mean,
I think
both of you, you know, it's fair to say, are known for your butts. And
that's true.
This is true. I feel like this is what the people want. And as the representative of the people, I think we should talk about butts.
Are you a representative of the people?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's gloss over that detail and okay. stick with butts.
Is the people the eponymous, like, they that
yes,
you
exactly.
were referring to?
They, you know, they,
okay,
the people.
Yes, they want butts.
Which, it's so weird because I was on Night Flirt today, and I don't even think I have butt pictures on Night Flirt. And I had two people who I've never talked to show up in my DMs, and they were like, both of them within like two exchanges were like, I'm just really into really big butts. And I'm like thinking, how do you know that I have a really big butt?
You've got a rump
Twitter
rap.
Maybe?
Yeah. I guess. I was like, oh, okay, somehow I'm attracting the big butt followers, but which is fine by me because I like them because usually they tell me all the things they want to do with my butt. And I'm into that as a princess.
I love the, like, I'm so sorry to the boob guys out there, like the titty lovers, because like, you look, boobs are great. Big fan of boobs. As everyone knows by this point, I used to have much bigger boobs, and then I chose to have a surgery to make them much smaller boobs. Mm-hmm. So that being said, I have a great mix of like followers on Twitter and Instagram and whatnot who are like people who like big boobs. Mm-hmm. That, historically liked me because I used to have insanely large boobs.
Yeah.
But it's like interesting seeing my own fan base kind of divert more toward like butt people. And yeah. And I'm so sorry to the boob people, but I like the butt people better. Like, oh. I just like them better. And you know why? It's like what you literally just said, Jesse, because I like people doing stuff to my butt more.
Me
so
too.
The butt people get into talking about what they want to do to my butt, and then that excites me. But when someone's just like, oh, I just want you to titty fuck me for 45 minutes, I'm like, I would rather take a nap. If you would like to hot dog my butt cheeks for 45 minutes, that will get me excited.
I totally hear you. Which, although I had a funny experience too, because I did the opposite, which is that I didn't have like really any boobs, and then I got implants, and then people are still into my butt, and I'm like, why did I spend $11,000 on this? Like.
But you do like your boobs more now.
I do. I really like my boobs. But like,
I mean, not just like, you know, visibly, but like the sensation too.
Oh, yeah. Everything about it is better. Like, I wish I did this 5 years ago. But like, but it's funny because like everybody's like, boobs. Yeah, whatever. Like, I want to see your ass because that's who, that's who my people are. I don't know. I think you're right. I think they are much more like, even when they want us to dom them, the only thing that they want us to do is just stick our butts in their faces so that they uh-huh. can like lick our asses. And I'm like, go ahead. I love this.
I'm into it. And then you get the thigh guys is what call them, mm-hmm. You know, which of course can be thigh people of any gender, but thigh guys rhyme. So I got to say it.
Right, that's fair.
Yeah.
But I love that. I love that because that's where I get the comments that are like, I just want you to like, scissor me with your thighs until I suffocate to death. And I'm like,
I know, I get that too.
And I'm like, that's what I'm training for. Like, literally, when I powerlift, that's what I'm training for.
Yeah, I like that too. And then sometimes people are like, I didn't know you had thighs like that. And I was like, what else kind of thighs would I have on a body like this?
I've been hiding them.
They're like, I just love the thick thighs. I want to just bury myself in them. And I like that. I like those guys. They're funny.
It is fun.
I agree with you. I like the ass worshippers because even when they want to be like when they want you to be dominant, it's mostly that they just want to do stuff for you. So
yeah.
It makes
eat
everything
the booty.
Fun. Yeah. And I want to let them. That's what I want to do.
Perfect. Or as my partner says, skate fast, eat ass.
Well, that sounds perfect.
Gotta spell skate with a numerical 8.
Of course.
Is there anything else, PJ, you wanted to know about the butts?
No, that was fine. I just figured we should address this very serious and somber topic.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. But the cat's meowing and the baby is, you know, getting whiny. So we probably should wrap it up, unfortunately.
Yes, I think the timing is perfect, and I also need to feed my fur children.
Yeah, I need to feed myself. I'm hungry. So.
Yeah, I mean, we should probably feed the baby and the cat too, but you know.
Yeah, so let's end with, since it's going to be on both of our podcasts, maybe we could plug our... Our places.
That's a fantastic idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So Siri, where can people find you?
You can find After Adult at afteradult.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're After Adult Pod on Twitter and After Adult on Instagram. You can also follow me professionally at The Real Siri PS on Twitter. You can, if you want to email our podcast a question or anything for a future episode, you can just email me directly at therealsiri@protonmail.com.
This is the Peep Show podcast, and we are at peepshowmedia.com, where we have not only the podcast, but articles and other multimedia content about sex and the sex industry. So we're at peepshowmedia.com. We're on Twitter at Peep Show Media, on Instagram at Peep Show Media, and I am on Twitter as Sapiotextual, and I'm Jesse Sage or Sapiotextual on most of the platforms, Minivids and OnlyFans and a bunch of other ones. And
all the places where you find your smut.
Yeah, Night Flirt and Sex Panther and wherever. PJ.
Yeah, I'm pretty straightforward. I'm PJ Sage. That's P-E-E-J. Sage, because PJ is taken on everything, and
it's funny though, because people think that's your name
is PJ. I know, which is fine, because that's actually like what my family called me growing up, like, hey PJ. You know, so that's cool, I'll take it. You know, we'll just be very
but sometimes casual. People I don't know will be like, how's PJ? And I think that's funny.
Oh my god.
Which is,
yeah, that's
fine.
Funny.
It's fine. I'll take it.
Yeah.
You know, so you can find me at Peej Sage on Twitter or Instagram or Manyvids or pretty much all the places or the .com if you want to see my photography portfolio, you know.
The .com.
The .com.
Okay, very good. We did a good job.
I'm also on the Facebook.com if you really want to kick it old school. I'm going to start a MySpace.
Because it's where you post all your porn, right?
Right, it's where I post all my porn. I'm thinking about starting a Friendster and a Life Journal. So just watch out.
My Zanga is Siri porn. Zanga.com.
Okay. Wow. We're good at this. This is very funny to have to like be a host and a guest at the same time.
But I know. It's interesting.
I think we pulled it off. I think we nailed it.
We're great. Yeah. Hats off to us.
Okay. All right. Well, it was nice having you and being had on our podcast.
Okay. It was also nice to host guest you on your my podcast. Thank you. You're welcome.
Okay, now I'm crying. She's doing porn again. Okay. All right, PJ, hit end record. This girl's a new creation, even after two kids. She'll change your whole damn life. You just watch one of the vids. Far from born again. She's doing porn again.